Finish up 1 Samuel tonight. So go ahead and take your Bibles and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 26. 1 Samuel chapter 26. And we'll pick up the story in God's Word, the true story. These things really happen, and they're fascinating. There's so many incredible lessons we can learn from this. For instance, have you ever been depressed or thinking that life hasn't really handed you a fair deal, or there's something wrong with the way people are treating you? Maybe it's a financial problem. Maybe it's a relationship problem. I'm just not getting what I deserve out of life. I deserve better than this. Well, let me tell you, today's story might put that in perspective. Because David has already been anointed king by Samuel, and he has killed a giant that no one else would take on. The ladies have sung a song to him and danced that Saul has killed thousands and David tens of thousands. He has eaten at the king's table. He has been the harp player for the king. Now things have turned and David is running for his life from the very man that he used to serve. And Saul is determined that he is going to put David to death. Could you imagine living at the king's table and all the great things that would entail to now having a hard time getting enough food to eat? We know that he had to get the priest to give him the showbread. We know that they were so poor, they were so lacking food that he sent a delegation to Nabal to try to get some food for his men and they wouldn't pay up. So that David's life is not good right now as he is running from the king. Now we picked up last week, we talked about how he spared Saul's life the first time in the cave, cut off the corner of the rope, let Saul live. At that point, Saul said, David, I know for sure you're going to be king. I'm not going to try to kill you anymore. I know God's going to be with you. You're going to do great things. Now, he's decided, Saul has, I take it back, David. I'm after you again. And we notice some things about David was so good militarily. He was so good at spying things out. We're going to see that again. And those who are studying 2 Samuel are going to keep seeing how David had an eye for war. His judgment was so good. And he was able to spy out things and know what was going on. So, he gets word, Saul's coming after you again. And so he sends out some spies. Let's go ahead and look at chapter 26. He's in the wilderness of Ziph again. Saul is coming after him with 3,000 choice men of Israel to kill him. And verse 4 says, David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul had indeed come. So David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped. David saw that Saul was in camp there. He saw Abner was there, the commander of the army. Now a couple things here. In verse 5 it says, now Saul lay within the camp and the people encamped all around him. So Saul's the most important person, right? So he's the king. He's in the middle. The people have encamped all around Saul to protect him. On all sides, you're going to have to get through a lot of soldiers, 3,000 choice men, if you're going to get to the king. So he's probably somewhere in the middle being guarded on all sides by all of his men. David asked two guys, Ahimelech, a Hittite, we don't know anything else about him, and Abishai, who will go with me down to the middle of the camp that's surrounded by 3,000 men? If you know anything about Abishai, it won't surprise you that Abishai said, I'll do it. So Abishai and David go in very quietly to the camp. And while they're there, Saul is laying there, 3,000 choice men around. Abishai says, let me take this spear and let me jab it through him. I will pin him to the ground. God has delivered your enemy into your hand. And I won't have to do it twice. And just take it one time and I'll pin him to the ground. It'll be over with. And David says, Abishai, can anybody kill the Lord's anointed without suffering the consequences for that? So he tells Abishai, no, you're not going to kill him. He says, what I want you to do is I want you to take the spear and the water. I have a plan that we're going to use that spear and that water for. If you notice again, it says it in verse 7 that Saul lay sleeping within the camp. And at the end of verse 7, it says that Abner and the people lay all around him. I want you to notice what David says in verse 10. as he's talking to Abishai. And this shows faith, because sometimes we have faith that God's going to do something, we just don't know how. And so David is like, I don't know, Abishai, what's going to happen, but I can think of three things that might happen to Saul. The first thing, the Lord could just strike him dead. Now, he knows that's what happened with Nabal, right? The Lord could just strike him dead, or he might live to a good old age and just die of natural causes. Or he might go out in battle, and an arrow might strike him, and he might die. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out, in verse 11, my hand against the Lord anointed. Take the spear, take the water. So they took it. But notice at the end of verse 12, that I'm sure that David was quiet in all of this, although they're having a conversation, right? And I'm sure Abishai was gifted in this idea of going in somewhere by stealth. But the real reason why the men didn't wake up is because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. I mean, God was able to put a deep sleep on Adam, take a rib out, and make Eve while Adam was still asleep. Now he's able to put a deep sleep on Abner, on Saul, and all the people to allow David to go in there, do what David needed to do in order to have this encounter with Saul. So I entitled this next section, David Trash Talking Abner. Now we know that David's skilled at trash talking with Goliath, right? We know that the trash talking he gave, but now he goes a little bit further away and he calls out, hey Saul, Abner. And Abner's like, who are you to call the king out? And then David says, Abner, what kind of man are you? You're basically given one job. Your one job is to protect the king. And you have failed. You have failed because we have been able to go right in the middle of the camp, and we've been able to steal the spear of Saul, and we've been able to steal his water. And he says, you know what needs to happen to you, Abner? You need to die, because you were unable to protect the king. The reality was, it was David whom Saul was pursuing that was really protecting the king. It was David that wouldn't allow Abishai to kill him, but Abner had failed his job because of the deep sleep. And so David, you're deserving to die as a result of this. And then David wants Saul to remember this day, because he's already forgotten the first time he saved him. Let's start reading 1 Samuel 26 and verse 17. Then Saul knew David's voice and said, is that your voice, my son David? David said, it is my voice, my lord, O king. Look at the respect that he is showing a man who doesn't deserve respect. And he's, except for the fact he's a Lord's anointed. And he says, why does my lord thus pursue his servant? For what have I done, or what evil is in my hand? Now therefore, please, let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering from me. If this is God putting you against me, I will offer to the Lord to calm this down. But if it is the children of men, may they be cursed before the Lord, for they have driven me out this day from sharing in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go serve other gods. So now, do not let my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord, for the king of Israel has come out to seek a flea, as when one hunts a partridge in the mountains. Then Saul said, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will harm you no more, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Indeed, I have played the fool and erred exceedingly. Now, he's 100% correct on all that. He assessed himself correctly and all that. He's played the fool. He has sinned. He's done terrible things. David goes on to say, please, Saul, value my life. I have valued your life twice now. Value my life. David wanted nothing more to return to Israel, where his God was. And then Saul says, may God bless you. You will do great things, and you will prevail. But then David encounters this moment of deep despair. Yes, I'm sure he was relieved that Saul says he's not going to kill him, but he knows that's probably not going to last very long. He becomes in such utter despair that he says, the only thing I can do to get rid of Saul trying to kill me is if I go to the Philistines. If I leave God's promised land altogether, if I leave the area where Israel lives, Judah lives, all those, I leave that, and if I go down to the Philistines, Saul won't stop looking for me. And that's what he decides to do. And he comes across a man from named Achish in the city of Gath. Now, remember about Gath? Gath was the second city that the Ark of the Covenant went to when Eli died. They stole the Ark of the Covenant. They took it to Ashdod first, and the boils and the rats and all that stuff. And then the people of Ashdod says, we don't want to hear it. Let's send it to Gath. And so they send it to Gath. So this is one of the major cities, the royal cities. David is living inside the city with Achish there. And then David goes to Achish and says, look, why should I dwell in this royal city? If I have found favor in your eyes, I would like to go down and live in Ziklag. And so Achish says, go. And so David and his men now have a new camp. It's Ziklag. He's living with the Philistines, and he is separated from God's people. Now, while he's there in Ziklag, this again shows just the ability to come up with good ideas and good ways of making people happy. So what he does is, while he's there, now remember, his life is sort of tied with Achish now, this Philistine. But he loves God's people. How is he going to keep on good terms with this Philistine and not harm God's people? And so what he decided to do, and you can be the judge of this, and whether you think this was a good thing or a bad thing for David, but I think you have to appreciate his shrewdness. So what he decides to do is go down, and all of these people that have been living in the land from old, including the Amalekites and some otherites that had been living there that weren't destroyed when they went into the promised land, he would go raid those people. It says all the way down to Egypt. I mean, this is his life now. He's raiding people, stealing, killing them, and stealing from them. So what he has done is he goes to these cities, he raids these cities, and he knows that he cannot allow the people to live. Because if the people live, they might go back to Achish and say, David's not killing people and raiding people from Judah and Israel. David is actually going and raiding these other cities, bringing you the spoils of these other cities, leaving you with the impression that he is robbing God's people. Because that is exactly what Achish thought. Because his reasoning was, man, this David has gone down and raiding, killing his own people. He is going to be a terrible odor to them. They're going to hate him. Now that he's done all this stuff, his own people are going to hate him. And his conclusion was, David will be my servant forever. He has no place else to turn. He's making his own people hate him. And that's exactly what the conclusion was in all of that. Alright, then we have the reading that we read for us. The Philistines have gathered against Saul. And Saul is afraid. Now Saul wants to hear from God. And so he goes and he asks the prophets. He tries to get the answer from the stones and the ephod. He wants a dream from God, and God was giving him the silent treatment. And he was afraid of this. So he asked, somebody find me a medium that I can go and call Samuel up from the dead. And they find one, and they go to her, and he asks. And she doesn't want to do it because Saul has already cast out all the mediums out of town. Her life's in danger. But Saul convinces her, she doesn't know it's Saul, convinces her to do this. And so while she's in doing this, Samuel appears. And she's afraid. And she sees Samuel, what have you done? Why have you deceived me like this? You're Saul. And so he goes, don't be afraid. And he asks Samuel. He goes, look, I'm in dire straits here. God's not talking to me anymore. And the Philistines have encamped around me. So I wanted to come get you. And Samuel says, and I'm in 1 Samuel 28, verse 16. 1 Samuel 28, verse 16. We're going to read 16. Samuel says, so why do you ask me? Seeing that the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy. Now, I'll tell you, this is probably the worst thing that a man could hear from a prophet of God. All right? So he goes, why do you ask me? God's not talking to you. What makes you think he has a reason? He doesn't want to talk to you. He's your enemy now. For the Lord has done for himself, verse 17, as he has spoke by me. For the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, David, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord, nor execute his fierce wrath against Amalek. Therefore the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. The Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Immediately, Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had not eaten food all day and all night. The Lord's your enemy. He's not talking to you. As a matter of fact, why are you surprised, Saul? This is exactly what God said he was going to do. That's what I told you. Alright? Why are you so shocked that God is doing what God said God's going to do? Furthermore, you're not making it. This time tomorrow, you and your sons are going to die in this battle, and Israel's going to lose. The witch of Endor, as we know her, she tries to insult him. Saul says, I'm not going to. His men and the witch of Endor together keep telling him, you're going to have to eat. You need strength. You need to eat. So here we have basically, I don't know if it was his last meal, but it was close to it, right? She had a fatted calf. So she prepares the fatted calf. The good stuff, right? She prepares the fatted calf, she makes him some bread, and he eats. It's time to go to battle. And I don't know what in the world could be going through Saul's mind at this point. And one of the very perplexing things to me about trying to get into Saul's head is, why in the world has Saul tried so hard to fight against the plan that God has communicated to him so directly and so often? So he knows that he's been told by a guy that's dead, okay, Samuel, the prophet of God, tomorrow you're going to die. And so he gets ready. He's ready to fight. But in the meantime, David finds out the Philistines are going up against Israel. And David has asked Achish if he could go with him. And Achish has given him permission. Come on. We're going to go fight against Saul. What's Achish's mindset? Oh, David's mine. David's mine forever. I own David. He's made us so odious to his own people. I own David. He'll do whatever I say. He'll be loyal. Plus, David has a good track record. He's proven himself faithful because of that plan that he had to say he's raiding the people of Israel and Judah, and he's not really raiding Israel and Judah, and he's bringing all these spoils back. So the lords of the Philistines, they say, no way. Let's look at 1 Samuel 29, and verse 4 says, but the princes of the Philistines were angry with him. So the princes of the Philistines said to him, talking to Achish, make this fellow return, that he may go back to the place which you have appointed for him. Go back to Ziklag, and do not let him go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become our adversary. For with what could he reconcile himself to his master, if not with the heads of these men, the soldiers of the Philistines? Is this not David, of whom they sang one to another in dances, saying, Saul has slain thousands and David tens of thousands. So they had heard about all that. And so they say to him, we're not taking that guy with us. We start losing, the battle becomes fierce. He's going to jump sides on us. Now, Achish goes back and gives him the news, and David doesn't want to have anything. David says, why? I've been honest. He goes, you've been like an angel of the Lord to me. Nevertheless, at the end of verse 6, the lords of the Philistines do not favor you. And he tells him to go back in the morning. In verse 9, Achish answered and said to David, I know that you are good in my sight as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the prince of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to this battle. Now, therefore, go early in the morning. You and your men return to Ziklag. Well, just like in all stories, there's things happening all over the place, right? Saul's at the meeting, consulting the witch of Endor. The Philistines are gathering their troops. David's trying to go with them to go battle against the Israelites. Ziklag has been attacked by the Amalekites. Well, that's David's home base. They have raided and taken everything, including David's two wives. So you get this picture. He's coming back with 600 of his men. Not being able to go with the Philistines to fight Israel, they get back to Ziklag, and it's been burned to the ground. Everything has been taken. Everybody's family has been taken. They're gone. And it is very upsetting to David and his men. Let's read 1 Samuel 30 and verse 3. 1 Samuel 30 and verse 3. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire. And their wives, their sons, and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. They cried all the tears they could cry. And David's two wives were taken as well. Verse 6. Now David was greatly distressed. For the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord. I mean, this is a guy who'd been appointed, anointed by Samuel to be king. Things are looking like this is God's plan. And then what does David do? He strengthens himself in the Lord. They decide to go out, chase these men down. They find an Egyptian. They get, again, David's interrogation techniques. Give him food, give him water, ask for information, promise not to kill him. The guy leads them right straight to the Amalekites. Verse 16, and when they had brought him down, there they were. Imagine this scene. As David goes over a hill, the Egyptians leading him to this. And this is what he beholds. And there they were, spread out over all the land. They were eating, and they were drinking, and they were dancing. Because all the great spoil which they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. It's going to change. Like this. David, I mean, we know David. David mounted his armies up ready to go kill Nabal, right? Now David sees all this, dancing, celebrating, having a good old time, at my expense, at the expense of my God. It says that David, in verse 17, 1 Samuel 30, attacked them from twilight until the evening of the next day. Not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. So David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away. And David rescued his two wives. And nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything which they had taken with them. David recovered all of it. Then David took all the flocks and the herds they had driven before these and other livestock and said, this is David's spoil. So now, you get a little, and this is a life. I mean, this is David's life right now. He gets a little food to eat, and then somebody comes and takes it. He goes over here and he's making deals with the Philistines, and then his whole city gets wiped out of his wife's family. He is not in a good place right now. Then there's internal conflict. So this is David's conflict resolution solution. Right? This is his solution to this. What happens? There's 600 men. Earlier, when they went to go fight with Nabal, David purposely left 200 men to guard the supplies, and 400 mounted up and went to go fight. This time, the numbers are the same, but how maybe they were chosen is different. This time, there were 200 men that said, David, we can't go. We're too tired. We can't go with you. And so they're the ones that stay with the livestock. Let's read this because I think it's interesting. 1 Samuel 30 and verse 21. It says, then David came to the 200 men who had been so weary that they could not follow David, whom they also had made to stay at the brook. So they went out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. And when David came near the people, he greeted them. Verse 22. Then all the wicked and ruthless men of those who went with David. Can you imagine being known as a guy who's hanging out with all the wicked and ruthless men? And I don't know, and they're already described them earlier. Now, I don't know if all of the 400 took this case, or just there was a subcategory of the 400 that were wicked and worthless at this point. And they said, because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil that we have recovered, except for every man's wife and children, that they may lead them away and depart. So what these 400 men say, we're not giving them anything. We're giving their wives back and we're giving their children back, and they can get out of here. Leave. So you have 400, 200, a pretty significant conflict that takes place here. But David says, my brother, you shall not do so with what the Lord has given us. What does David do masterfully? And this is not fake for David. The first thing David says, first, guys, we didn't do this. We didn't go and save these men ourselves. God gave it to us. And then notice he also says, God has given us, who has preserved us, and who has delivered into our hand the troop that came against us. And all of our remembering David and what he did, I think we can say without a doubt that David recognized God's holy. Because God, we didn't do this, God. For who will heed you in this matter? But as his part is who goes down to battle, so shall the part be who stays by the supplies. They shall share alike. And that was the rule for that. And that's a brilliant solution that David had. And he gave all those 200 men their spoils. Now those 400 might guard the supply going there as well. Then in 1 Samuel 31, we have Saul. Remember David said three things might happen to Saul? I don't know which one's going to be. The Lord can strike him dead right now. He can die of natural causes. Or he can go out to fight the battle and lose. Samuel has told him directly, although dead, comes back to alive. He says, Saul, this is what's going to happen. You're going to go out to battle. You need to come here and die. Exactly what happens. Goes out to battle. Struck with an arrow. We all remember this part of the story. He knows he's not going to make it, so he asks his armor bearer to kill him. His armor bearer refuses to kill him. Saul commits suicide. He falls on his own sword. He dies. The armor bearer, seeing that Saul has fallen on his own sword and is now dead, he takes his sword out, he falls on his sword, and now he's dead. The Philistines have won, just like God said, and so they're going about, they're taken all the spoils of the Israelites, and they come across Saul and his sons, and they take the bodies. Remember, they are using Saul as basically a way to get the Philistine morale up. Look, we won! And the men of Jabesh-Gilead, they've been nailed to the wall. The men of Jabesh-Gilead, who Saul had saved way back when they were being surrounded, and they were going to have their eyes plucked out. Those men appreciated what Saul had done, so they come and get his bodies. And David's going to, I don't know if you guys have covered this in a second, Sam, David's going to reward what God did later for what they did. And Saul, Jonathan, and two of his other sons are dead, just like we said. A couple points before we were dismissed. What we learned from David is David had a respect for God and his anointing. What great restraint. You think about David, you think of restraint. Twice he had the chance to end his life. And how many of us would have just ended it right there? The Lord wants him dead anyway. I've already been anointed king. I will do it my way. What patience he had as God was laying out. I'm not saying he was patient 100% of the time. But boy, he had more patience in following God's plan than I think a lot of us do sometimes. We get impatient with God. I think we learn from this story that you can't fight God's plan. No matter who you are, God's holy. God, when we talked about this morning, Pharaoh tried to fight God's plan, and he was the most powerful person the Lord had found, no luck. Saul tries to fight God's plan, no luck. Guess what's going to happen? No offense. If you try to fight God's plan, did you have more success than Pharaoh? Do you think you'll have more success than Saul? God's going to be holy and be considered holy. So we need to submit to His plan and do things God's way. Not our own way. Not other people's way. Things happen in God's time and in God's way. It's up to us to accept that. And do what God does. I know that there's probably not a single person here today who is always patient, submitted to God's plan. There's been times when people said, I don't like that. It shouldn't be that way. God should do something different. God is cool. Always right. Our job is not to question Him, but not to submit Him. We recognize who He is. We respect Him. And if it's His way, it's His way. Where are you right now? Are you submitting to the Lord? Are you following His plan, His way? And trusting that He's going to allow the outcome to be what He wants the outcome to be? You still have responsibilities. You still have to do what God wants you to do. But you have to allow God to work His plan in His time. And our job is to be patient. What God planned is for you is to submit your life to Him. There's anybody here who has not submitted their life to Him? You've been washed in the grave of baptism. Have your sins forgiven? You can do that. You can't get to heaven any other way but God's way. I mean, there's no way you can try to fight all day long. You can say, no, I'm going to do it a different way, God. You can try to be like Naaman the leper. I have another idea. God's going to say, no, 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 and no. You can try to be like Abraham and Sarah and say, I have another idea. God's going to say, no, no, and no. This is it. So submit to Him right now as we stand and sing.